Righto. I'd like to open the Audit and Finance, Audit Risk and Governance Committee meeting at the 5:30. And item two, acknowledgement of the traditional owners. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians, the Gariyada people, and recognise the contribution of Gariyada elders past, present and future, working together for the future of Port Hedland. Thank you. Item 3.1.
Can I have a point of clarification before we proceed, please? On just what you said?
Yeah.
Point of clarification?
Yes.
Last month, traditional custodians was not there, traditional owners.
Mm-hmm.
This has not come before councillors yet, so I can't understand why we've changed this.
Okay. Councillor Newbury, the presiding member, decides, you know, how to say the acknowledgement. It's actually not up to council, it's just a presiding member thing. So, welcome to call the Department of Local Government and get your own clarification on that. And
I'm just confused, presiding member, that, you know, I just went
Your concern is noted.
Economic Forum, and ministers, Brendan Grills, BHP boss, FMG boss, all acknowledge traditional owners.
And Councillor Newbury, I just did. Okay. Item three, recording of attendance. 3.1, attendance is as listed. 3.2, apologies. There are nil. 3.3, approval leave of absence. There is nil. 3.4, disclosures of interest. Members, are there any disclosures of interest?
Nothing to you.
There is nil.
Again, another point of clarification.
Item four, response from previous questions. 4.1, question taken on notice from a public at the Audit Risk and Governance Committee meeting held on Tuesday the 9th of August. There was nil. Item 4.2, questions taken on notice from committee member at Audit Risk and Governance Committee meeting held on the 9th of August. There was one from Ms. Panganis, and the answer is listed.
Can I put a clarification?
No, you can't. Do we want to clarify that answer at the moment or not?
Through the chair, if you would like to clarify that, you can do that at the present time.
Okay. Okay. So the research that was done on Ms. Panganis's questions last Audit Risk and Governance meeting has highlighted that public members, will not be able to ask questions at questions from members without notice. Public members will have to ask questions during public question time, and public question time rules will then apply. If you have any objections to those, I'm sure you can research it and ask the Department of Local Government to clarify any issues you may have and then present it to the next meeting if there is any things that may differ between what officers have recommended and what you have researched. So we'll go on to item five.
Just a minute before we go on.
Mr. Atwood, no.
I ask for clarification.
Mr. Atwood? And I'm not taking it at the moment, okay?
Sorry?
Mr. Atwood?
Okay.
That's enough. Now, do you want me to clarify what standing orders says? Have you read standing orders?
I've read standing orders, okay, standing orders right here. also got the act here also.
Mr. Atwood. Mr. Atwood, no.
You just asked a question.
Mr. Atwood, what? I said no.
Okay.
Item 5.
What's
applications
what's
from...
President, what's the reason for answering no?
How do you want to handle this, acting CEO?
through the chair, obviously the presiding member manages the meeting, and the presiding member can take questions or not take questions. There's been an explanation provided in the agenda to Ms. Panganis's question, which has actually brought up some inconsistencies that have been applied over recent times. So we're now applying the rules as they are required to be applied, and the presiding member obviously has the right through the standing orders under section 6 to determine what questions can and can't be answered or will or will not be answered. So again, it's at the discretion of the presiding member.
And like I have noted previously, the officers have given the advice, and I'm sure that you would have read the advice. And like I said before, if you are not happy with the advice, then you can research it yourselves and then come back to us with your interpretation of the Act and standing orders. Thank you. Item 5, applications for leave of absence. Do I have any applications for leave of absence?
Can we not ask any question? This is a point of clarification.
Ms. Panganis, can you just wait until public question time? Okay, you can ask your questions at public question time. Applications for leave of absence. Sarah Neil? Thank you. Item 6, attendance by telephone, instantaneous communication. Do I have any applications? Nope, there are nil. Thank you. Okay, public time. This meeting has been recorded on audio tape as an additional record of the meeting and to assist with minute-taking purposes, which may be released upon request to third parties. If you do not give permission for your recording, your participation, please indicate this at the meeting. The public is reminded that in accordance with Section 616 of Town of Port Hedland local laws on standing orders, nobody shall use any visual, vocal, electronic devices or instrument to record the proceedings of any meeting unless that person has the permission from the presiding member to do so. Members of the public are also reminded that in accordance with Section 6174 of the Town of Port Hedland local law and standing orders, mobile telephones must be switched off and not used in the meeting. So 7.1, public question time will open at 5:40. And do I have any questions from the public? Yes, Ms. Atwood. I have, Ms. Atwood, I have requested a meeting with the traditional owners, yes. I haven't had that meeting yet.
The second question in relation to that item is, did the council receive any legal advice on the change?
Mrs. Atwood, my understanding is that the council, there is no legal requirement for the acknowledgement of traditional owners within the agenda, and that the council actually does over and above the requirements in stating acknowledgement of the traditional owners.
The third question is in relation to the response you just gave. I want to know whether or not you received legal advice on that, in particular, that you are now changing the changing the status of committee members in the audit committee from a committee to a public person.
Acting senior, would you?
So, through the chair, this is in relation to the community members of the ARG having to ask questions during public question time.
Yes.
So, obviously, Mr. Van Gannis raised the issue in regards to the requirements for standing orders at the last meeting in regards to speaking and what the ARG can ask questions on. The staff and governance area undertook research to ensure that we're providing accurate advice and identified that under the standing orders and in respect to the definitions of public and versus committee and what that means, did not give any recognition of member status of the community members under the current standing orders and also within the definition of the Act.
You know, to cut it short, you're saying you didn't receive legal advice.
Through the chair, we don't need to receive legal advice to interpret the Act.
Okay, do I have any other questions, Ms. Pangilis?
I'm just a little bit confused. Can I ask the question as a member of the public?
Member of the public, yes.
Okay, so I have to go there to be able to ask that question.
How does that work?
Through the chair, so in regards to public question time, all members of the public are required to give their name and address and their question.
Yeah.
Okay. My name is Nina Pangahas. I'm live at 35 Sutherland Street. In Port Hedland. My question relates to item 4.2, questions taken on notice from committee members of Audit, Risk and Governance Committee meeting held on Tuesday the 9th, August 2016. The question I asked at that meeting, as spelled out in this minutes, relates to the nature of questions that can be asked at the Audit, Risk and Governance Committee meeting. I won't deal with the nature of the what the questions is all about. But what I said in that meeting is that, and the tape recording can also be reviewed, that question relates to relates to one of the terms of reference of the Audit, Risk and Committee, which relates to compliance. So on that point, I was assuming that my question will be answered as it is within the boundaries of the terms of reference of the Audit, Risk and Governance Committee, which was part of the agenda at that point in time. And another question relates to this item as well.
Ms. Manganis, can we have the question of the first part? What is the question?
The question I have to the word it. Why is it that the presiding member deemed that my question was outside the agenda at that time, when the point I was making relates to compliance, which is part of the terms of reference of the Audit, Risk and Committee meeting, which was part of the agenda at that time?
Okay. Okay. Acting CEO.
Through the chair, I'm still trying to get really clear on what the actual question is. I know you're referring to the compliance section of the terms of reference. The question which was obviously asked was in regards to the specific section, standing orders 24, which relates to what can and cannot be asked. In undertaking the research into answering your question, that's what where this was discovered has been responded to. You're obviously allowed to ask questions in regard to the compliance as per the terms of reference.
But for the benefit of the state reporting, the question arose from a question which was asked, I think, in the other previous meeting. Mm-hmm. So there was a sequel to that question, and I think we need to go back.
Okay, Ms. Panginis, I can answer the original question then. States in the standing orders under section 6, number 6, that the presiding member may decide that a question is out of order and not to be recorded or responded to. If in respect to a committee meeting, the question does not relate to a function of the committee. So the original question related to the CEO's employment, and that did not relate to, that does not relate to or has no function in this arena.
But the terms of reference of the Audit Business Governance Committee includes compliance.
Acting CEO, can you?
Through the chair, I'd just like to get clarification of where you think that is, or the compliance element to an employment contract.
I haven't seen the contract, so a question at the time that was a very simple question. What was the basis of the separation
again, Ms. Panginis.
And I received two conflicting answers there. It was confidential, and then the presiding member said that the CEO failed to comply with his KPI. So I was confused at that point.
Ms. Panginis, again, it's confidential. It was a council decision, and it's not part of the Audit and Finance Committee terms of reference.
Okay. Another question. In regard to your suggestion...
I'll just leave one.
In regard to your suggestion that if we have some issues in relation to the... answers provided under 4.2.1, that it is that we should research. Do you mean if we get the legal advice, it is our own initiative, or can we request the town of Port Hedland to assist us get some advice on this?
No, Ms. Panginis, understanding, and also years of involvement in council, I've done my own research. You can request help through the officers and see if they will help you in these areas. I'm sure that they will, but this committee is an oversight committee, and you should be doing your own research and coming to your own conclusions, and then presenting those conclusions to the committee for review.
And then will that research be in my capacity as a member of the public or as a member of the committee?
Acting CEO.
So through the chair, obviously the committee speaks by resolution and recommends to council. So you would bring obviously your own input, understanding of an item that's on the agenda within the terms of reference. You provide that input into the committee debate. It's voted on, and that recommendation is put forward to council for consideration. That's how the committee speaks to A, the council. If the council then resolve to accept that recommendation, that's for the officers to implement.
Ms. Panganis, can I stop you there? And I'm sure Mr. Atwood has questions for us.
I might just quickly add, if that's okay, that officers are here to help the committee as best we can. But obviously it is about helping as a collective, and if that is through having a forum or workshop to assist the ARG, then we're able to do that, obviously.
Question for public comment. Ron Atwood, Huntingdon, Nanza Street, Deputy Presiding Member. Am I going to be limited by the number of questions I can ask here?
You will, Mr. Atwood.
This is something that's hit me for the first time. Are you going to restrict me?
I am, Mr. Atwood.
Okay, are you aware of the Local Government Act 1995? I will read it to you. A person who is a council member or committee member can have access to information held by the local government that is relevant to the performance by this person or any of his or her functions under the Act, under any other written law. The Act supersedes standing orders.
That's correct, Mr. Atwood.
So you restricted me from asking questions. You called out 4.2 as being taken.
Your question, right? Mr. Atwood.
Right. My question is, why did you stop me from asking about 8.3 and 8.5?
So to clarify what you just read out from the Act,
yes.
You need to have a look at the Local Government Act terms used, and have a look at members or member. And in relation to a member, it says in relation to the council of local government, meaning an elector, mayor or president of the local government, or B, a councillor on the council. That is the definition of member, Mr. Atwood.
Maybe we're reading from two different acts, because at the moment a person is a council member or a committee member can have information.
Mr. Atwood, and again,
would you like to...
Can we bring governance in? Yeah. Thank you.
So section 5.92 is access to information by council members or committee members. So that's access to information. The section that we are talking about is in regards to questions at committee meetings. So they're totally separate pieces of legislation. So 5.92 is in regards to elected members or committee members asking for access to information to help them perform the functions of their duties, of their position as a committee member or a council member. So that is at any point in time. And then that is determined by the CEO as to whether or not that information will help them perform their function. What we're discussing, so the answer to 4.2.1 is in regards to when questions
should be asked. Sorry, I'm not talking about 4.2, I didn't say 4.21.
So of the agenda, 4.21 of the agenda.
No, I didn't say
Mr. Atwood, just ask me the questions, okay?
4.21.
Ask me the question, Mr. Atwood.
The question, you rudely interrupted me and I said the thing.
Mr. Atwood.
I wanted to ask about 8.3 and 8.5. In the minutes.
Okay.
Page 13, if you want to look.
Are we going all over the place, or did we answer the first question?
Well, we didn't quite get the conclusion.
Mr. Atwood, can I get the can I get the governance officer to finish?
Through the chair, if the coordinator of governments wouldn't mind just maybe finishing off the section of that refers to what a member is.
Just the minutes from last meeting. So Members is defined in the standing orders as the meaning given to it in the Local Government Act. So member in the Local Government Act is defined as a member of council being a elected mayor or president and a councillor who holds the office of councillor. So committee members is defined in the Local Government Act as an elected member who's elected to a committee by the council, or a community member who's on a committee, or an employee who was on a committee. So because the questions from members within the standing orders states members, we have to take the definition that is given in the Local Government Act, which is only elected members, which is why community committee members cannot ask questions under questions from members without discussion or without notice, I think it's called.
So just through the chair, 8.3, I'm not talking about me, I'm talking about Councillor Blank over there. You look at 8.3.
That's this.
That's the previous.
Oh, the previous.
I want to know why 4.2 was answered and 8.3 and 8.5 weren't answered.
Can we just have a little bit of time here, Miss Atwood?
Can we put the minutes there? Can we get the minutes? That way
Thank
we know what's being.
So we're still receiving information on 8.3.
Yes, sir.
And I've got it
I think we already got that clarification, didn't we? The auditor, was it verbally or was it...
verbally at the moment. We haven't sent a memo out yet.
In relation to 8.3, Mr. Atwood, we have not sent out a memo yet. That's been compiled by the administration as we speak, so I'm sure that will be coming to the next ARG meeting.
Well, why wasn't that put up when you said that 4.2 was the only one that was there? And also 8.5.
Mr. Atwood, this is questions taken on notice, and the question is still on notice. When it's answered, it then comes into the agenda. So the question might not take... When this agenda went to print, that question had not been answered yet by the people that we had asked for clarification, so that's why it's not in the agenda. So I'm sure that it'll be in the next the agenda.
Yeah, but why do you think about 4.2 and not 8.3 and 8.5? It's been a month since the last meeting.
Acting CEO, do you want to clarify that?
Through the chair, we've also answered the question in the agenda. It wasn't taken on notice. It's just that was the answer provided on the day. Obviously, with the 4.2 in the current agenda was taken on notice and an answer has been provided. This information was answered on the night and information will be coming back when it is available to ARG for their review. So what we didn't take that.
We didn't. It was in the agenda.
So where's the answer? Yeah.
And it's in the minutes. So,
just want to ask two more questions. Is 4.21 going to be included in the minutes?
It will be, Mr. Atwood. That's right.
So that's in tonight.
This is the agenda tonight. So. So when the meeting is concluded, then the minutes will be released and it will be in the minutes, yes.
Now, what I really want to clarify is, I've got the minutes here for the 9th of August, right? And 4.21 was an agenda item in those minutes. Are they going to be clarified with those minutes or tonight's minutes?
Tonight's minutes.
The confirmation of the previous minutes will be done in 10.1 of tonight's agenda.
Will 4.21 be included?
It is in tonight's agenda, so that will be confirmed at the next ARG meeting.
So what you're saying is the minutes for the 9th of August 4.21 not going to be included into there?
No, Mr. Atwood, no.
Okay. Just with the Local Government Act 3.7, inconsistency with written laws. The local law made up under this Act is inoperative to the extent that it is inconsistent with the Act or any other written law. I think you need to look at
4.21. Mr. Atwood, my interpretation is we have followed the correct process, and if you would like to research it yourself and then bring it to the next meeting, I'm sure we can discuss it. Or you could try a notice of motion to have it brought up at the Audit, Risk and Governance. Also, the Audit, Risk and Governance has... for quite some time now, the last 6 months, tried to follow all the rules correctly. And as we have found issues with previous ways of doing things, we have repaired them. So...
The last question then is, can I clarify stuff in the minutes or the agenda when it comes to those items?
Acting.
Through.
I'm going to have to ask all my questions now about the agenda.
I see. Yeah.
So, through the minutes, the confirmation you might be able to provide.
No, Mr. Atwood, no, because it's not part of the agenda.
You're saying I can't get clarification on the agenda
On the agenda item, yes. On the agenda item.
Well, what did you say now in the beginning?
The agenda item.
So, through the chair. Now, obviously, this is taking standing orders to the rule of their intent, which through the time of its drafting didn't include committee members or community members as being part of it. So. And basically ensuring that now we're following it correctly, this is the process that has to be undertaken. I'll answer your question in 2 seconds. But there's always the opportunity to obviously review standing laws, and there is a process to do that. And obviously that is something that can happen in time, from a council perspective, to ensure that community members are provided the same level of opportunity as council members. So that is a process that can be taken to update and ensure that community members don't miss out on questions from members without notice. Under the current situation, committee members are obviously able to debate, under the current situations, would not normally be able to ask questions points of clarification through the actual prior to debate of the item.
Then we go back to, I'll take you back to Local Government Act, section 5.92. Have you read bloody thing?
That's unacceptable. That's right. Through the chair, yes. That's unacceptable, please.
Miss.
Keep your mouth out.
Mr. Atwood. You still are required to follow standing orders, okay? And if you've read the section which is mentioned, the conduct of members at a meeting.
Okay. It's not applied in the past.
Okay, we shall close public question time at 6:05. And open public statement time at 6:05. Do I have any public statements?
2 of the agenda. Change to the acknowledgement of traditional owners. I'm a Kuriata traditional owner who is a registered claimant on the Kuriata Native Title Claim, which is currently before the Federal Court seeking determination. I wish to advise that the person or persons who have made the changes to the council acknowledgement to the traditional owners that your actions do not comply with the following legislation in relation to the Native Title Act 1993, which is a federal legislation acknowledging the rights and interests of Aboriginal people in Australia. Number one, the Mabo to a majority of the High Court decided that the Miriam people were entitled as against the world to the possession, occupation, use and enjoyment of most of the land of the Miriam people in Torres Strait. Number two, in reaching this conclusion, the majority of the court, the High Court that is, the High Court in Australia, held that the common law of Australia recognises a form of native title to land and indicated that the principles applied to the mainland as well as the Miriam people in Torres Strait. Such native title exists according with the laws and customs of the Indigenous people. The Council made the decision to change the acknowledgement of the traditional owners from, I'll just shorten this, acknowledging the traditional owners of the Kuriata people to acknowledging the traditional owners as custodians. In redefining the interpretation of the following words, the traditional owners defined in the High Court decision under Mabo 2, custodians defined as person or persons who are responsibility of taking care of and or protecting country. The presiding member has used his discretion to make the changes to the acknowledgement of my people, the Kuriata people, which is inconsistent with the Federal Native Title Act of 1993 to recognise, protect the rights and interests of my people by changing our status from the acknowledgement of us as owners to persons who are carers and protectors. In the Act, the Native Title Act, it said that the Crown has a fiduciary duty to recognise and protect the asserted traditional land rights and interests of the people. It was argued that the fiduciary duty would be breached but if, among other things, the Crown were to exercise any discretionary powers in a manner which would not recognise and protect those rights and interests. The Local Government Act 1995, section 3.7, states inconsistency with written laws. A local law made under this Act is inoperative to the extent that it is inconsistent with the Act or any other written law. I might remind you that the Port Hedland Town Council did a heads of agreement between the Kuriata people in 2002. In that agreement, it states that the Kariyarra people are the traditional owners of the land and waters in the application for the native title claim. I would say to you that the changes you have made could be breaching this agreement. It could also be breaching the Native Title Act, which is a federal act, and I will be seeking legal advice on it. So the presiding member should get legal advice. I just want a few minutes to talk about this proposal of changing the status of committee members and making them come up to this podium to ask their questions. To me, I would say it's discriminating. These people were appointed by the whole council. Under the Act, they are identified as members. The standing orders is a law made by the local government and the council. It is in conflict with the Local Government Act. So there you have an inconsistency again. And I believe that your proposal, Mr. Mayor, will be null and void. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Atwood. Do I have any other public statements?
Ron Atwood, 111 Ann Street. I don't know whether I can get time to put up a statement at all, but I'd like to put a motion up here that funds be found or continuously used to put or employ an internal auditor. I think an internal auditor here is a necessity. The number of staff that this council has lost over the last 3 months really highlights what the problem is in this council and this shire. And if you don't employ an internal auditor, you are going deeper and deeper into the mire. It's hard, you people changing the rules at the last minute, that I've got to come up here and put this stuff up.
It's not changing.
Mr. Atwood,
I'm making a statement here.
Yeah, and I'd just like to correct you that we have received advice through governance, and we haven't changed the rules. We are in compliance with the Act and standing orders.
I can't make a statement.
Yeah, carry on, Mr. Atwood.
So, when do I put up a motion, Rob? I can't. Come on.
Statement time. It's statement time, Mr. Atwood. Just you. Have you finished your statement?
Can I? Do I have to put more to the statement here, or do I have to? You know, I'm asking. Do I have to put a motion? Can I put up a motion later on or not? I'm just trying to clarify.
We are in statement time, Mr. Atwood. Thank you for your statement, Mr. Atwood. Do I have any other public statements? Close public statement time at 6:14. Item 8, questions from members without notice.
Nothing at this stage. Mayor. Thank you, Acting Mayor.
Councillor Newbury.
Yes, I do have one actually. I think the question is, I too would like to put a motion up tonight that community members under these questions can have their own separate item agenda so that they don't have to stand on a podium as they have been elected in by us as members.
Mrs. Councillor Newbury, as stated in the agenda item, there is a process that has to be followed to change standing orders. The process takes between 4 and 8 months. Notice of motion is an option for you to put forward so that process can be started. Any other questions, Councillor Newbury?
No.
Councillor Whitwell?
Oh, yeah.
we're embarking on a very big expenditure item at the moment, which is to do with the spoil bank.
Must ask a question first. Councillor Whitwell, I'm not taking that question because it's got nothing to do with what is on this agenda. So do you have another question?
No, I don't.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
I have a question.
Item 9. Declarations that all members have given due consideration to all matters contained in the business paper before this meeting. Can I have a show of hands, please? Item 10, confirmation of minutes of previous meetings. 10.1, confirmation of minutes of the Audit, Risk and Governance meeting held on Tuesday the 9th of August 2016. With the Office of Recommendation there. Do I have a mover to move Councillor Whitwell? Do I have a seconder? Seconder to move the minutes. Seconded, Acting Mayor. Do I have any against? One against. Speakers for, Councillor Whitwell, Councillor Blanco. Speakers against, Mr. Atwood. Councillor Whitwell.
I've reviewed the minutes and, in my opinion, they're reasonable minutes and they reflect the situation that was debated at the time. And that's all really I would do.
Thank you, Mr. Whitwell. And I concur with Councillor Whitwell's comments. Speaker against, Mr. Atwood.
I feel these minutes are not telling the true reflection of what went on in the meeting. The acting CEO advised in an affirmative about the auditor, contacting the auditor sort of stuff. The question was put up by Councillor Whitwell regarding us as individuals, can we have a budget and something put forward so whether we can contact the auditor or not? Well, I think it needs to be in black and white what's going on here, and here you're passing on stuff that we approve of, and it's not in here that we receive the advice. And you also bring in 4.21, which as far as I'm concerned is way over the table. That's it.
Speakers for? Speakers against? Speakers for? Speakers against? Write a reply, Councillor.
All right. Look, I think there's a problem in minutes and the issue is that we debate them today and we put them up, we introduce the issues. Some responses given in the next set of minutes that we get, which is a month away, right? And then we might still have some problems with that and say, we've got another month away, you know? So I think the frustration in this comes about because of the reflection of time. And if you can't get things sorted out more quickly, I would think they're pretty useless to be on there, really. And I think I haven't got a suggestion as to how we do it, but I'll have a think about that as to how we might be able to accelerate this process, because it's really just starving people and it's starving the community of those inputs that are going in there.
Thank you, Councillor Whitwell. Put it to a vote. Those in favour of the officer's recommendation. Okay, those against? Motion is passed 4-2. Item 11, announcements by presiding member without discussion. there is nil. Item 12, reports of officers. 12.1.1, monthly reports, status of audit, risk and governance committee decisions, completed decisions at risk register. Do I have a mover for the officer's recommendation?
Can I have clarification, please? I was up there and you said yes. I come here, you're saying no.
Hang on a second. Within debate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr. Atwood.
Thank you. Mr. Chair. On page 18, policy implementations. Policy 1.202, risk management applies to this item. When we get over to page 19, the risk as report, the information purpose only, the risk assessment as table has been removed. Why? It applies and yet it's been removed.
Through the chair, my understanding of this is as an update report. The risk is not relevant to providing an update. Obviously, it's the items within the table itself that are being reported back on in regards to the process are what's important. This is just really the delivery mechanism to update the risk register and also, obviously, the current and completed decisions and status.
So when we go back through the risk stuff, why is, when you talk about risk, likelihood based on history and existing controls? When we talk about risk, it's based on what's happening, not on just what controls you've got in place, on history. I'm talking risk here.
Through the chair, whether or not the audit risk, if the committee would like to see the risk matrix on whether you receive an update and measured against the risk of you receiving that or not, it will be negligible. If you wanted to see that, obviously we can put that in. In regards to providing the monthly reports on the status of Audit Risk and Governance Committee decisions, completed decisions and the risk register, that is the core information that's being provided. The risk is against you receiving this information or not in this report. Is really negligible.
So I'm just asking the question is, we talk about risk likelihood, right? And you're saying it is based on the history of the existing controls with this. But when I talk about risk likelihoods, I consider the whole of WA. And you are coming back and you're confining us by your controls. The risk assessment is done on the whole of Australia and then you bring it back to your local community. I just wonder whether my sitting in with risk assessments for as a supervisor on a company is greater than what your risk stuff has been assessed on.
Mr. Atwood, risk in relation to this item is the risk of us receiving the report or not receiving the report. It's got nothing to do with the report content at the back of the agenda item. It's just the risk associated with putting up an item to say the monthly status of the risk and governance committee decisions and as per the officer's recommendation. In my view, there is absolutely no risk to receiving the reports as stated in the officer's recommendation. The risk and that how it's got how it's listed in the agenda, the risk is associated with those 3 points in the officer's recommendation. So the risk is associated with receiving the reports, which I don't think there's any risk to that.
So going back to the risk register, page 101, I've got a high 12, high 12, high 12, and a high 15.
how can we...
Acting CEO, could you try and clarify it a little bit more? Was I incorrect? Or?
So, obviously, the policy outlines any risks above 10 are reported on a risk register, and that is reported back monthly to the AIG.
So, through the chair, my question is now, is put it back to us, are we just going to tick the box and say, okay, a high 15, a high 12, and a high 12 is great, because at the moment the benchmark is set at 10, or do we really sit down and look at this high risk stuff? Do we do a workshop on it? Well, what do we do?
So through the chair, you will see that the risk action plan is there in regards to managing that risk. Obviously, AIG are there to support and through, as your terms of reference, to provide opportunities to input into risk mitigation. The risk action plans in some cases are there. Some have action plans or managing the risk. Some have talked about accepting the risk. But it is part of your responsibility to oversee the risk register and provide direction if you see fit on some of those risk mitigation measures.
So it's just through the chair again. I've got the top of the page, it says the 31st of August, and the bottom of the page is exported on the 2nd of September. How can you say you've done something about it?
So through the chair, just trying to clarify the question.
I don't understand it either. Could you re...
31st of August up there?
Which page?
Page 1 of 1 on the risk register.
Mm-hmm.
On the bottom of the page, it says exported on the 2nd of September. This is 2 days after the 31st of August.
And sorry, the question is?
The question is, what have you done about it? And he said he's done something about it.
So through the chair, as per the policy, it talks about reporting back on a monthly basis, and that's what we are doing, reporting back the risk register. As reports come to council, they are risk assessed. They are given a rating. If it ticks over 10 and hits the risk register, they are added to the register. This is part of the reporting mechanism that has been agreed to through AIG and council in regards to the risk management policy.
So who can question... how we get it back to 10 if it's at 12 or 15?
Mr.
Atwood, do we workshop it? What do we do?
Well, there's every opportunity for you to review it, and if you understand risk, which it sounds like you understand risk a lot more than most of us.
That's right.
Okay. So then your responsibility is to put a notice of motion forward or discuss it with the officers. And then and give some solutions on how to reduce the risk. But would you like to add to that?
Through the chair, we'd be more than happy to obviously pull together a bit of a workshop for the AIG to determine opportunities for obviously mitigating risk down to zero, not just below 10, eliminate the risks completely. So we're happy to run a workshop with all the AIG committee to look at some mechanisms to allow that feedback and process. Obviously we are set by following the policy, which is council's position on what they on how they want to manage, and obviously AIG and council have endorsed that. But we're more than happy to provide a further workshop to provide that and just to jump back a little bit earlier, and you know, we'll hopefully be in the process soon to be able to recruit someone who can be an internal audit role and risk management role to assist in that work as well. Okay. That's obviously been adopted as part of the budget.
Just through the chair, as my role and responsibility on this committee, with the risk register, I don't think any of us here can support that we go above 10. I think this needs to be taken back and workshop and see how we can reduce it.
Acting?
Through the chair, obviously that's the policy of council now, so council have to change their policy. Basically, it was identified within that anything above 10
comes to us.
Everything above 10 would be put in a risk register, which is reported back monthly.
To
that
us.
That was discussed within this ARG committee. It was resolved and put recommended to council, which adopted that framework. So if there is a change in the framework, then that would have to then be put forward to council for consideration through an ARG resolution.
This is the problem I'm having now. Do we have a resolution or a motion? Do I have to get up there and
Like I've stated before, Mr. Atwood, you have every opportunity to email the staff to have these agenda items put on the ARG agenda. You have every opportunity to put notice of motions forward.
Chair, just tell me when you received your agenda, please.
That's right.
I got mine Monday.
Mm-hmm.
I've only had yesterday and this morning to look at it. And coming to this table here and seeing this risk here, I'm not supporting that. No way in the wide world.
Okay, Mr. Atwood. Can I just say, we're at a stage now where we're supposed to be working together, and I'd like, our tone and our questions to be more respectful towards the staff. Otherwise, I will enforce the code of conduct and also the standing orders. Okay.
So your tone to me is not.
Mr. Atwood, have you got another question?
No. Okay. I've got a question of clarification, which because somebody else has heard, I think I should. And this is just trying to look at improving this document. Sorry, can people hear me?
Yeah.
I'll speak up. On page 18 of this document, it's in my system, I've got an electronic one here, it talks about strategic implications. And in those strategic implications, it talks about one, which is be a powerful voice. This is in 4.2. Be a powerful voice and influential partner with federal and state governments and major industries for the development of Port Hedland. Now, if we go over the page, just down the page, and we put economic, according to this, there's no sustainability economic implications. But in fact, that whole sentence is about an economic implication. That is, we're looking at trying to influence people to develop, and ourselves, to develop Port Hedland. So I can't understand how you haven't, there's no significant identifiable economic impacts arising from that, because it means, well, if you've got that, you might as well not have it, because if it doesn't do anything, it stays. The other issue is...
Councillor Whitwell, I'll have that answered. Acting, can we have governance to answer that, or would you like
to? Through the chair, and obviously what we're talking about in the report, and trying to think of this in regards to the officer's perspective and why in the report. The officer's recommendation is that the auditors and government receive the following reports, which is our response to policy direction. It's very difficult to ask a committee to receive a report and then have obviously significant areas where reflecting the resolution that we're putting forward, the recommendation we're putting forward, would have significant economic impacts, environmental impacts, social impacts. I understand where you're coming from in regards to the elements that might make up the reports being presented do have elements which would have impact along those, around those areas.
That's right.
Which, if they're in the risk register, would have been, hopefully, should have been identified, because the risk register is all about individual reports and risk ratings, which should show those implications as well. If there was some benefit in regards to... Sorry, I put my glasses on so I can see it.
Well, there's other ones as well.
Where if there was a benefit within the risk register to have some elements of showing the implications of social, environmental... risk, we could add that column in, so it was very clear within the risk register what implications were around any or all of those elements.
I think that's if we're going to talk about them, we need to show some consequence. And the things I'm looking at also are, I'm just going to the strategic community plan, and in the strategic community plan, which is a guide for us, right, in terms of our expenditure and risk and the like, we have, things like representing our community and providing transparent and accountable civic leadership, facilitate community engagement and civic participation. We've got ensure members know how to access our services and facilities, all measurable items, right? And
yet again we talk about social impacts, no significant social impact. You're right about this document. The document itself has no significant social impacts, right? It's just difficult to see how you can sort of, well, I don't know whether strategic sustainable implications is even worthwhile putting in, you know? But anyway, I think it's just a bit confusing, and I think what we need to do is, I think this idea of having another column in there, which really identifies where it fits into the community plan.
I agree that it's confusing. It confused me for quite a few years when I first started attending council. But, it's quite clear to me now that, the executive summary is referring to receiving the reports, that's all. The reports themselves are, you will see that the reports themselves are more than likely the things that we should be debating are whether, the item has been completed 100%, okay, or as the document says, some items are incomplete, which they're ongoing. So the report's been received, there is items there that are ongoing, it hasn't been completed. If you wanted to debate things, you would be debating things that are complete that you didn't think were complete. Would you like to add to that?
Would like to add one more comment through the chair. And it is a practice we are trying to have through all the reports, is not deleting sections because they're not relevant. And even though that might mean there's no significant sort of comments under each of those headings, it's not to have things cut and pasted and lost, and therefore we get different variations of council templates over a period of time. So officers are being encouraged, are being directed not to cut out sections of the report, but they're asked to think about every section. If it is not applicable or it's about writing that in so it's very clear that they have looked at it and considered it, and whether that is a question that is asked by council or committee members during debate or at question time is something that's able to do, and it might be something that hasn't yet been considered that should have been put in. So we are ensuring that all officers writing reports do keep to the same template and provide information on every single element, so we've got consistency.
I suppose really we should go on to look at when are we going to have a look at these ones that are sort of 20% or 50% finished, and where they derive from.
Acting CEO, when are we going to be looking at those items?
Through the chair, we can obviously take some questions now. What the presiding member would allow. We could also, as part of our workshop...
I think the question was, when are these items going to be progressed? Would that be a better...
pretty much.
Councillor Whitwell, yes, acting CEO.
You said it's ongoing. Well, I'm going to win.
That's right.
Through the chair, again, it's all on the individual basis of what the obviously current status of the council decision is.
Workload.
There are a few things that we will be that might be slightly, I wouldn't say delayed, but will require a little bit of parking until we recruit the staff that will be leading and managing this. The delivery of the 16-17. Budget is a significant step forward and getting on with things, and particularly around the resourcing, particularly obviously back to this committee in regards to the functions of internal audit, risk management, and also business improvements. So we're looking to get that recruitment underway and have that resourcing freshly delivered for usage by the ARG.
Mm. Ms. Panganis.
I think this has probably been covered, but I think we should actually include here, although I might have missed it because it's very, the font is very small, the progress in terms of the appointment of the internal auditor, you know. I think we should include that. I don't think I've seen it in this report, because we made a decision to appoint that last year.
It is in the report, Ms. Panganis. And,
which part was it?
I read it. Have you got the...
I tried to read it this afternoon.
The section I've read it in this.
It's just hard to read if we can have a report that is a little bit more. Because this is already an A3 page, so if we can sort of expand it a little bit more.
And Yanis will find it for you, and I have seen it in here. Any other questions, Ms. Pengen?
Yeah, another question is, again, in regard to what Councillor Whitwell said. If it is possible, can we have a time frame associated with all these decisions? Because, again, if you attempt to measure KPIs, again, the time frame is also included. We don't like in a situation where the KPIs becomes very blurry because there is no time frame associated with it.
Ms. Panganis, I remember distinctly discussing this 6 or 8 months ago in this committee meeting in relation to that very comment, and I'm pretty sure that I put a motion forward to ensure that timeframes are actually listed in these, that was not seconded by this committee.
I don't recall that.
Would you like to add to that timeframes on this?
Through the chair, it's something that obviously is at the discretion of the Audit Risk and Governance Committee when it passes a resolution, when it would like it can actually include a time frame for reporting back as part of the resolution. So that is something that can be set through the recommendation to council through the Audit Risk and Governance Committee recommendation. So that is something that can be included in the work and the recommendations you put to council, which obviously then gives very set timeframes as well as direction, if adopted by council, to report back. I suppose that is probably some of the better practice to obviously continue the loop of information. There also has to be a level of, I suppose, from time to time, resource consideration to the ability to follow through on some of those timelines. So I know that committees can be eager to receive things sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And with the resourcing coming on board, there will be a heightened element of quicker turnover for some information back to ARG.
Yeah, through the chair, I agree with what you said. But this is just an estimated time frame. It will be useful. That way we know what we're targeting. We know the resources. Instead of at least guide us in terms of resourcing and taking actions to achieve the goal we have set for ourselves.
I, Ms. Panganis, then I suggest maybe a email to the administration requesting that change within the document, so we have a you know, a time period allocated to each item.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
That's all. Thank you.
No, Mr. Atwood. Is any other members? No.
I just want
Mr. Atwood, I'm going to ask that the committee move the officer's recommendation. Do I have a mover? Officer's recommendation, move. Councillor Whitwell seconded, acting mayor, deputy mayor. do I have any against? Against? Mr. Atwood. Speakers for Councillor Whitwell. Speakers for Acting Deputy Mayor. Speakers against Mr. Atwood. Mr. Whitwell?
I think it's going somewhere towards what, you know, what we're trying to get at in terms of trying to keep track of targets in terms of particular high-risk areas, you know, not the normal sort of areas where we just have the day-to-day events, but these are areas where there is a fair bit of risk associated with, in terms of not just probability, but quantum. And so that's a good thing, and also, but I do think some improvements can be made, like putting the time schedules, and also what I'd like to see in this would be some recognition of the various areas of expenditure, so that we can see that when we're looking at the critical things, where are these occurring? Are they occurring all in the recreation area, or are they occurring in a basic infrastructure areas, you know, just so we've got an idea. You can do that by using colouring and trying to work out, you know, some way of visually getting it right. And I think that's also a problem in our accounting systems as well. I know there's a players. But look, I think it's a really good step forward, and I think people should be, you know, congratulated for it. There's one thing, just going back to that question I raised to about the linkage between the actual community plan and the sort of elements of whether it was economic and something else. I think we could probably think about some different wording there, just to make sure that we don't see it as a relevant issue, right? Rather than, you know, there's none of this. It's a question of relevance. Anyway, it's just an idea.
Speakers for, Acting Deputy.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Happy to receive the report as written, take on board some of the comments around the table that we've discussed, especially Mr. Atwood's discussion around those high risks and possible mitigation, stuff that we can look at in future. Happy to receive it as is, and obviously noting that any risk management matrix is a perception of someone's point of view at any given time and how you combat that moving forward. So the main thing is to highlight it, which we've done, and come up with a battle plan moving forward. So happy to receive those reports and look forward to the possibility of future works in those areas. Thank you.
Speaker against, Mr. Atwood.
My concern about this risk register, the council statement applies for the 31st of May 2016. There's a high risk of 12 sort of thing. The council decision statement of the financial for the 31st of May is a high risk 12 also. Council decision for the South Edmund Bowling and Tennis self-supporting loan is at high 12, and then we come to the bottom one, which is the boat ramp.
high risk of 15 there. I think it, my role here as on this council or on this committee is to highlight the problems and what do I have to do to show the council where the problem is. Is this the only avenue that can, you know, bring the staff back to doing something or get into a workshop over it? Because do the councils understand these risks here? I think it is time that maybe we need to get together and do workshops on it. I reckon it's a great document because, you know, you'll highlight what we've done 100%. Because that's what we put up last time.
Yeah.
And I think it's great that, but I'm just disagreeing with certain parts of it. The other one I'm disagreeing with is just the one question which I want to ask was on the first pages. What was 86D? What are you trying to hide from me, 86D? That's it.
Speakers for? Speaker against? Speakers for. I'll speak for. I think, like I said previously, I don't think members of the committee have an understanding of what is actually going on here. So I'll speak on an example. We are receiving this report. We have a risk matrix here. So behind the scenes, obviously, staff are actually working towards reducing the risk of these line items. Okay, so I'll take the boat ramp for an example for you. The boat ramp, yes, it's high, it's 15, and it's a high risk, but the council is actively behind the scenes mitigating that risk at the moment. Doing a workshop on a high risk of 15 this month will probably be irrelevant and it won't help the organisation, period, because that risk is going to be mitigated in the next 3 to 4 weeks. So again, it's a matter of seeing the risk, yes, but it's also a matter of making sure those risks are reduced and the administration is reducing the risks associated with the majority of those high-risk areas. Speaker against? Speakers for? Write a reply.
Well, look, I think we've spoken about the incidences, and I might have a different view about some aspects of the boat ramp, but that's not because I'm not a boat driver. It's just an experience. And but that's fine. I think it's getting somewhere. And what we want to see is, obviously what we want to see as an audit committee is improvement.
Right.
And if that's improving, then it shows that that people are focused on the ones that things that are important.
Take it to a vote. We have a mover in Councillor Whitwell and a seconder in Acting Mayor, Acting Deputy Mayor Melville. Those in favour of the motion, show of hands. And those against? Against? Councillor Newbury, did you vote? I didn't see your hand go up.
Yeah, I went for.
Four? Okay. The motion is passed 5-1. Item 13, motions of which previous notice has been given, there is nil. Item 14, new business of an urgent nature, there is nil. Item 15, matters for which meeting may be closed, confidential matters, there are nil. Item 16, closure. 16.8, date of next meeting. The next Audit Risk and Governance Committee meeting will be held on Tuesday the 4th of October 2016, commencing at 5:30. So I declare the meeting closed at 6:54.